morning, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra, United November, and this is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This Cars server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8, Zulu Golf Lima. And all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they have checked in. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for this digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net control actually for this session is Gary, KC2RMO. His location is Syracuse, New York. I'm merely opening the session for him this morning. My name is Kathy. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra, United November. And my location is beautiful Vero Beach, Florida, where it's currently a temperature of 72. And believe it or not, a high today of about 86. It's a beautiful day out there, wall-to-wall sunshine. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled. If so, please come aboard. All right, one more question for you. Do we have any of those birthday stations last week, this upcoming week, maybe today, that would like to come aboard? No emergency traffic and no birthdays today. Okay, that's fine. This is the Sunday morning rag chew. The purpose of this net is to bring our members and non-members together in a relaxed and informal atmosphere to enjoy a moderated rag chew. Our topic this morning is Ask an Elmer, a session that we always do once a month. It's where you can ask that NCS any questions you have of technology, computers, ham radio, just anything out there. And we have some experts in the field. I do want to advise all stations that these sessions are always recorded for possibility of future presentation on our website as a podcast. So all of those stations participating will be part of that recording. With that, hopefully each and every one of you have a great day and a great session. And please check out our website once again. A lot of changes have been made there. And it's a very visually entertaining site. So with that, Mr. Gary, KC2RMO, I'm going to turn it over to you, and hopefully someone in the back will be your backup, and I'll be riding there with you as well. KC2RMO, the gavel's all yours.
Well, thank you, Kath. We've got Steph here. I don't know if she's in, but we'll see how that one goes. But good morning, everybody, and thank you very much for the intro, Kath. Good morning, everybody, everywhere. Thanks for connecting to the Sunday Morning Rag Chew. Our topic this morning, as Kathy has said, is Ask an Elmer. What we'll be doing this morning is simple, taking your questions about ham radio, whether it's about operating or the technical aspect of it. It could be adjunct things like computers or anything technically related. We'll take your question and field it to everybody listening. Jim, my backup, was supposed to be here. Real knowledgeable guy. Hope he can make it. So we'll cross our fingers and hope for that. We'll have a few hopefully interesting tidbits along the way, too. And remember, we love to hear from new hams. So if you're new to the hobby, speak right up, okay? We'll take you right to the front of the room. No problem at all. So it's time to ask an Elmer here on South Cars. Whether you're a new ham or been around the block a few times, we'd love to hear from you. We're taking check-ins right now. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars looking for check-ins to get things going.
Six, Victor.
We have six, Victor. Anybody else want to come aboard for the first time around?
Quebec, Germany, November.
Hey, Slav, good morning, and welcome aboard. Anybody else this time around? Guess not. So we'll get things going with Six Victor. Good morning, Gordon. Good to hear from you, sir.
Hey, good morning, Gary and Stephanie, and hello to Slav over there. It's actually good afternoon to that rascal. Which reminded me, I didn't look at the standings this morning, Slav, so I'll do that after I get through chatting here. see how the Olympics are shaping up this morning. Well, there's three of us that are still a little groggy, Gary. You mentioned two, the text box and the and you. But I'm number three on the line. I'm about halfway through my first cup of coffee, and it just hadn't kicked in yet. 65 degrees was my starting temperature here in Central Florida, where that's Fahrenheit, obviously. We're going to 81 today, or so I'm being told, and then back down to about 60 tonight. Very light winds, 60% chance of rain, although I don't see it on the radar, but boy, it is a lambaster up on the Florida-Georgia line. New Orleans has already got it. Mobile, Alabama has already got it. It's moving east. And I'll bet you Jim, maybe he's up there without power because it's pretty bad in his area, Jim and Rebecca. Membership number 371 will be in the background. Tiger, thank you. KY6V.
Hey, thank you, sir. As always, it's great to hear from you. And, I wonder about that. Georgia has really taken its fair share of weather abuse this winter. It's interesting. We hear, Steph was just reading an article about the snow cover here in Syracuse. We're actually down to a foot on the ground from you can, yeah, and in some places you can actually see the ground. We are at 38 degrees here in the beautiful outer Comstock section of the city. And it's really kind of starting to look like spring, or act like spring anyway. So we're kind of hoping for the best, but as Mr. Groundhog told us last night, we're still good for about another 6 weeks. So, you know, on and off, probably get one more good snowstorm before it's all over anyway. And snore too. Yeah. But thank you, sir, for checking in. And what a great pleasure to have Slav along this morning. It is it's great to hear from you. So come on aboard, Slav, and again, welcome, QGN. Come aboard.
Okay. Thank you very much, Gary. And good morning to everybody present. Probably good evening too. And by the way, we have evening already. It's so strange to say that because you have just woke up over there, and we have already 10 minutes past 7 p.m. And by the way, the Olympic Games ceremony is going to be to start in 52 minutes. And well, it was a whole day behind me, and we were watching our sportsmen and waiting for their for the results. And there were some results. Probably you will know that about that in the news. So a bit later about that. Okay, let me refresh the system first. Okay, and you probably can hear some noise or Claire Mary is from the Olympic events there. I cannot turn them out. Okay, anyway, I'd like to say a couple of words about my working conditions. It is getting dark outdoors and 32 degrees exactly. It is 32 Fahrenheit. Not very warm, not very cold, but it's nearly the end of winter over here in the central part of Russia. And what I would like to say a couple of words. Well, and my number is Echo 0158, $1.58. And I think I would like to say a couple of words about the rag chewing topics today, which I suppose it's devoted to ham radio. And what I would like to rag chewing about is whether the ham radio is should go to something new or probably should do something traditional. I mean, there are so interesting things, new things in the ham radio now. I can say that something like spread spectrum millimeter bands, millimeter wave bands for some people is very interesting. Then VoIP systems, one of them we are using right now, and probably there are plenty of them, like D-Star, like, I actually connected one of the system, but not completely finished this. I forgot about the name. Anyway, there are many interesting things that I would like to ask some people present, whether ham radio operators should pay much attention to something new, or probably to keep on working in the traditional ways, traditional modes of ham radio, like CW, single sided, and so on. Okay, probably it would be interesting to know your opinions about that. With that, let me pass microphone back to the net controller and say hello from Russia. Over.
Hey, thank you, Slav. First of all, I love the pictures of you on the website. You and the family. It's super to see you there. The Olympics must have been just a great thing to have, and it just must be a thrill to have them there. That's a great question that you ask. And, you know, my take on it, and we'll throw this out for everybody else, too. But my take on it is that, you know, the beauty of this hobby is that you have the capability, or I guess a great part of the hobby is that you always have the traditional way of doing things, and you're always looking forward, to new ways of doing things. And I think some of the things we've talked about in the Ask an Elmer segment have kind of encompassed that as well. We've been talking about things like digital voice. As a matter of fact, let me just put this in the box. You'll see a link there that'll give you an update on Free DV. We were talking about Free DV before, which is a way of doing very narrow bandwidth digital voice that is hi-fi, excellent voice quality. So there's an update there on that for folks that have been following it. But that's the beauty of this hobby, is that you're always you always have the foundation of the traditional way of doing things, and you're always stretching the technology. You're always pushing the edge of that envelope, going to the latest and greatest. So there's room for everybody there. Let me just buy a nickel. I mean, you can take this back to where folks remember when sideband first came in, and people were saying, well, you know, that's never going to last, you know. But today, you know, the AM stations still are out there. I personally love AM. I love the sound of AM, and it has a traditional value for me too that I like. So that's pretty cool. But obviously, the way that we're doing things now is sideband, of course. And I think with this digital voice, it holds such a great promise that you know, it might just become the sideband of the future. So, but it always expands, and it's always rooted in tradition. So I think we have plenty of room for both. So Slav makes a great observation there, and I'm going to throw that out for check-ins right now. Where do you think ham radio is going? Do you think there's room for both the traditional way of doing things, or and the newer technologies, or do you think that maybe we're going to lose our traditional way of doing things, and you know, it'll all be steeped in VoIP and digital this and digital that? Let's take some check-ins and see what you think as we continue on the Sunday Morning Rag Chew. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars. Well, apparently people are still thinking about that, so we'll maybe come back to that later. What I will do right now, though, is kind of continue along the same line of thought that that Slav was talking about, and with the newer technologies. One of the things that we were talking about a little bit earlier in some of the earlier nets this year were inexpensive ways to do things with ham radio. One of the things that I had come up with was a $20 SDR, a $20 software-defined radio. And it's a very simple thing. It's done with a device called a dongle, which you plug into your USB port on your computer, and a little bit of software, and believe it or not, you have a very usable VHF and UHF receiver. With the addition of a $50 board called an up converter, you have the ability to receive general coverage on this thing. So you're covering all the ham and shortwave bands on this thing as well, too. All the modes, too, because the software controls the modes. So I asked for one of these kids for Christmas, and I was lucky enough to get one. And I've been playing with it, so I thought I'd give you a little status report on what's been going along with that, okay? And here's what I've found so far. For $20, you can't do a better job. It's really great. If all you ever do is tune this thing to the National Weather Service channel in your area, you've got yourself a weather radio for $20. But it could do a lot more than that, and that's what I'm kind of playing around with right now. Let me buy a nickel. I have an up converter board for it. I had some issues with the up converter board at first. They have a oscillator that you plug into it, a little oscillator chip that you plug into it. That apparently was defective, so I wasn't getting the results that I should have. They replaced the oscillator and, did all the interconnects, and blammo, the thing worked, you know, it's great. So I ran a spool of wire through the house for an antenna, and I was getting 40 meters, 20 meters, WWV, everybody, you know. It was working just fine. So the thing does work. And I think for under $100, it's a great thing to play with, you know, and it can become very usable. So if you shop around and you just do SDR dongle on Google, then you can certainly find any number of sources for them. Mine came from a place called New Elec. They sell both the dongles and the boards. It is a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to play with. But the real action on these things is in the software. And let me get to that in a minute. I use both Macs and PCs. We have a peaceful coexistence in this house. It's like sitting right over to my right is my trusty 10-year-old and still as good as new iMac. Which I will never part with. I love that machine. And I've got my killer atomic-powered HP Pavilion high-performance special thing here. It's a killer computer. I love this thing. So everybody gets along very nicely here in the computer world. But the beauty of this software-defined radio is that you have different software titles that work on both platforms, and they both have their own advantages. So there is a software title called SDR Sharp that you use on the PC side of things, and there are multiple titles that are available for OS X. So this week I just started playing around with some of the Mac software on it, and that's been very encouraging. So we'll have a report on that too coming up in future net. As to how the Mac software works, I'll tell you one thing. There's a title that I just put onto the Mac called GQRX. It's actually started out as a Linux program and has become a Mac port that is astounding. There's no setup on it. You just load the software, plug in your SDR, and it recognizes it, and away you go. Jury's still out on it. I haven't played around with it too much, but it's pretty good. So anyway, that's the update on the $20 SDR. Let's take some more check-ins right now as we continue with asking Elmer anything that you want to comment on ham radio-wise. Well, it sounded like Elmer Fudd there, ham radio-wise. Anything you want to comment on ham radio-wise, come on aboard. We want to hear from you now. So we continue on the Sunday Morning Rag Chew on South Cars.
Alpha Victor.
And 6 Victor with some info. I may have doubled there. 6 Victor with info, Gary.
Okay, we had three that time around. We'll take him a little bit out of sequence. Pick up six, Victor, first. He has some information for us. So, Gordon, come on aboard.
Yeah, I'll make this short. I have a voice message from Jim in Georgia. He and Rebecca have lost internet. They'll rally when they can. Go ahead, sir.
Well, we'll stand by for him because he's worth standing by for. And we just simply will not need a backup this morning. That's the way I approach this problem. It's like, okay, you know, no backup needed. It's okay. Thank you, Gordon. And hopefully Jim can make it along with us before we close the net this morning. But thank you for the information. Alpha Victor, you were checking in there, and we'd love to hear from you. Come on aboard.
Yeah, good morning, everybody on the net. This is WD4KAV, Joe in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Just wanted to give you my general 2 cents worth or 5 cents worth on ham radio and how it's going to change. I primarily, the underpinning of ham radio for me is the ability to communicate point to point without any intervening infrastructure. And that to me is also one of the enduring fascinations of ham radio. You know, you throw a signal out into the ionosphere, you don't know where you're going to be heard or who you can hear. So that to me is, I would almost go so far as to say real ham radio. But having said that, I also agree with comments that you and others have made that one of the beauties of ham radio is the various facets and always willing to jump into new technologies and see what you can do that hasn't been done before, or different ways to use new technology, maybe in a way it wasn't intended. And let me let this drop for a second. Like the dongle you were speaking of, let me let this drop for a second. And the other reason I see a continued growth in facets of ham radio communication, like Echolink, like D-Star, which I've just gotten started in here a couple of months ago, is the fact that a lot of hams, myself being one of them, are moving into places where we may not be able to put up an HF antenna of any kind, and so we're going to be relying on ham radio communication modes that rely on infrastructure, which I realize kind of goes against what I said in the beginning. But I would still think, and I think overall, as time goes by, the nature of ham radio will change, just like you or somebody else mentioned. Let's drop again. You go all the way back to the beginning. We started out with Spark Gap and CW, and no, I'm not that old, and progressed to regular CW and then AM and then sideband and now DV, digital voice, and I've got comments on that, but I'll save them for another net. So I think overall the technology and the primary means of communication is going to progress, but I still think it would be a shame if ham, as a general rule, lost the interest or the ability to, you know, put up antennas and communicate from station A to station B. That's my 2 cents worth, and I didn't write down your call. I'll just give you mine. This is WD4KAV in Port St. Lucie.
Hey, no problem, Joe. And I'll tell you, I thank you, number one, for joining us this morning. And I couldn't agree with you more. I am at my roots a firmly entrenched HF ham radio operator. I love doing exactly as you said. You key that mic, that signal bounces off the atmosphere. You don't know where it's going to end up, and you do all the you fight the QRM and you put up antennas and you build that station. Yeah, it's all part of it. That's all where it comes from. But there's really amazing new technologies out there too, and they're a lot of fun. It's all about, and I think this hobby always was all about embracing new technologies and incorporating them. It's like a bag of tricks. You know, you always have that foundation of a traditional radio, and you build on it. You know, you say, okay, I'm gonna experiment. It's all about experimenting. You know, I'm gonna experiment with digital voice. I'm going to experiment with Echolink. I'm going to experiment with this SDR. there's always something new coming down the line, and that's part of, I think, part of not only part of our tradition in the hobby, but it's also part of our charge as amateur radio operators. I think to a degree, if we're to be true to the hobby, that we are obligated to experiment with new technologies. I think the better hams, or if you want, or I can't say that. I can't say the better hams, but those who are looking to take it to the next level are the ones that are going to embrace something new and at least fool around with it a little bit so that they can get a handle on things. They can get a feel for it. And so I will always be a traditional ham in the sense that, you know, that HF station will never, ever go away. And I always consider that to be my roots. Let me just buy a nickel. I'm sorry. I was just thinking about, I'm such an HF snob. I mean, I look down on 2 meters, you know. But it's true. I am just, to me, that's where it's all about. But there will always be a place for the newer technologies too, and I feel very strongly that we should you always have to keep your hand in. You always have to try something new, or at least try to learn about it. Anyway, that's just my opinion, and those opinions may vary among those listening. But thank you, sir, for checking in this morning. We'll go out to Ohio, and Rick and VXP, come on aboard.
This is N1PXP, Rick in Chillicothe, Ohio. Yeah, I tend to agree. Of course, living in Connecticut, in the one land, I noticed that it's really, I think back when I got my ticket back in 1995, going through the aspects of 2-meter, 440, a lot of people back then, the true hams were always saying, well, it's always radio, nothing else. And yet, the strange thing is, they really didn't, most of the guys I knew back then, didn't really like the idea of remote links as far as repeaters and just a lot of things to do with computers. However, I had a couple of guys that were dead set against having any kind of computers in their shack. However, they were into national traffic system, message handling. And I said, well, you know, you're utilizing a TNC and you're getting into a bulletin board for message handling. That's computers. And I have one guy, he says, but I said, well, you know, you don't want to tend to go up into newer technology. And PSK31 was another one that a lot of guys were pro and con on it. Some didn't like it. The old-timers all said, well, it has to be HF. It can't be anything else. And you have to put out 1,500 watts. And we're all saying, well, if we can do it and... said I timed out. I didn't even know I timed out. A lot of guys felt that you had to be always with 1,000 or 1,500 watts. And, you know, we kept saying, well, hey, if I can do, like in my case, I could 2 meters. I was running maybe 1 watt or less and getting decent coverage. And I said, hey, that's fine. Then when, as far as, now I'm into Echolink, I feel bad that I can tell just by the ones that are on Echolink, their stations have gone through the setting up their Echolink or IRLP. It just doesn't seem like there's a lot of interest in the... I would say in the Connecticut area, like it is around the all across the rest of the country. And if I feel bad in a way because it's like, well, they're one of the first ones that want to change certain technology, but yet they're the last ones to embrace it and really put it to any great use. I've got a mentor and a few other guys that I keep trying to tell them, hey, go ahead, you know, download the Echo Link, try it out. If you don't like it, you can always, you know, delete it out. But I have a feeling you're going to find it quite the thing. You know, it's just, I believe, let me drop one more second. I think, yeah, I definitely agree. For those who can't set up antennas, Echo Link is a great alternative. And yeah, maybe eventually I could get into another location where I could really set up not a really big antenna, but you know, something halfway decent for the area. I might get into D-Star and a few other modes that would be equally challenging and a lot of fun. But I have a feeling that we're still, I wouldn't say really at the bottom, but we still have a little bit more areas we probably could do a little more playing around with and exploring and finding maybe better modes of communications that would be a lot of fun. Hobby is never, I don't think a hobby is ever completely out of any, how would I say it? You know, there's always room for learning and always more challenges that yeah, we can have a lot of fun with. N1GXP, back to net control.
Well, Rick, I'll tell you. First of all, thank you for checking in. You know, there's so many things. You know, when you were talking, I was thinking about, all right, where do I want to go next in my, you know, we all have our individual ham radio journeys. I mean, some folks, it's like, okay, you know, I got my technician license. I bought myself a $30 Baofeng, and you know, I'm on the air, and it's cool. That's enough for them, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. Some people have, you know, $20,000 radios, you know, it's and antenna farms, you know, and that's their thing. There is a very diverse element in this hobby. We are all doing our own thing, yet we're all kind of, you know, gathered around a set of common principles too, and that's, I think, one really great thing about this. You know, it's like you can do as little or as much as you want. You can be as simple or as elaborate as you wish to be. And you know, you had me thinking too about I'm all over the place here, just thinking about some of the things that you said. You had me thinking about stealth antennas, and I think what we're going to do is we'll do an Ask an Elmer Net one day on stealth antennas. Because I don't have a lot of room here. I'm on a lot in the city, and I don't have a huge amount of room. But I think I've solved the problem at least effectively here, all right? But it was expensive. There's got to be a cheaper way to do it. And I'll bet somebody out there would know it, too. I use a magnetic loop antenna, but it was pricey. More than I wanted to spend. But that's okay. But, you know, you talk about your personal journeys, and you know, some of the things that I want to do. Let me just buy a nickel. I want to contact the International Space Station. I have an antenna downstairs to hook up to my HT to do it. I have to find out more and more about the actual mechanics of that, but that's one of the things I want to do. I'm really getting interested in packet radio. I think that just kind of took a hold of me, and I'm reading up on it, and you know, want to play around with that too. But there's, you know, and again, there's just no end to the amount of diversity in technology that we can play with too. So we're all individuals, and we're all playing with individually attractive technologies. It's pretty cool stuff. That's what makes this hobby so great. So that's pretty neat too. But the other thing I would say too is what it's great to be able to have these at our disposal. Now, for instance, my ham shack is gutted right now. as we, you know, continue to remodel this house. That was one of the rooms that, you know, just went, you know, so that was gone. If it wasn't for EchoLink, I'd be, the only thing I'd have is I have a 2 meter, a couple of 2 meter handhelds, and a 6 meter handheld, which I love. It's a Cherokee AH50. It's as old as the hills, and it's great. But I wouldn't be on amateur radio at all if it wasn't for EchoLink. So, and I love these nets, and it's just terrific stuff. So there's no limit. I guess it's the whole big deal that there's no limit as to what we can do. All this stuff is available to us, and it is great just to be able to use it. Let me just buy another nickel. The topic this morning is Askin' Elmer. We're taking your questions and comments on Ham Radio. Slav gave us a great way to get started this morning, where he was talking about, do you believe that that we have a... are we better off embracing the traditional roots of ham radio, or are we better off looking to the future and some of the new technologies? And I'm saying there's room for both, and it's been a great topic of discussion as we've continued. So let's take some more check-ins and see what you think about that or anything else. We've got some other things to talk about, too, that I can throw out there, too. But right now we'll continue along the same line, or anything else you want to throw in there. We'll take check-ins right now as we continue on the Sunday Morning Rag Chew. This is South Cars.
L-O-Y.
Z-I-V.
6 Victor Recheck.
All right, another good three to get things going. So we'll kick things off with L-O-Y. Come on aboard.
Well, it's an interesting topic tonight, or this morning. Good morning to everybody. I just got up. And, I mean, I like the old ham radio guys. I had the chance of meeting a bunch of them on field day, which was a good story in and of itself. And they were doing around 50 to 60 words per minute on Morse code. That takes years of practice and years of experience. And I give those guys credit. And it's always awesome to hear all the, you know, the dots and dashes and whatnot. And it definitely is a real neat experience to watch that and to listen. You have no idea what they're saying, but unless you do know Morse code. But you do understand at least that they know what they're talking about. Let me buy a nickel here. But the other spectrum of it, I do want to get into PSK. When I first became an amateur radio operator, I only used EchoLink because I couldn't afford any type of HTE or mobile unit or anything like that. I have now purchased a Yaesu 6R, which I love, and some of the local guys have been helping me out with that. But I mean, otherwise, I like both the new and the old. Back to net control. This is KD8LOY.
Hey Nathan, that's there. You gave a couple of good topics there. In the first one, I would say, if you ever want to know what all those dots and dashes mean, South Cars has some wonderful outreach courses on learning the code. And I'll tell you, this was many, many moons ago, when I was just a ute, as they said in the movie, I was about 12 years old. About 13, rather, and I was working after school in a drugstore. The guy that ran the place was a ham, and he would talk about it, and I got interested in it, and so he gave me an ARRL manual. It was his old manual. He got a new one. He gave me that, and he got me hooked, and I read that thing from cover to cover and the whole thing. The only thing that kept me from getting my novice license back then was I didn't have a way to practice the code. It was hard for me to practice the code. So I would work on it. And, you know, I got up to about I was up around 8 words a minute, somewhere around there. I kind of got into other things, like, you know, playing in rock and roll bands and girls and stuff like that. Decided, well, okay, I'll get around to it. Long story short, it was about 40 years later that I got back into ham radio for real. And, of course, you didn't need the code to get the license back then. So, but I went back and I took the outreach course here at South Cars because I wanted to learn that code. It's great stuff. It's fascinating. And, again, it's part of our tradition, okay? And it's a great thing to have, you know? Plus, you can do insane things with code. You can go very long distances on very low power. Let me buy a nickel, and I'll tell you about another one of my favorite things, which you're getting interested in, and that's PSK31. Be right back. PSK31 is an awesome mode. I use it a lot. I have gone on 10 watts from Syracuse, New York, which is where we are located, to Slav's neck of the woods, out to the Ukraine, on PSK31. It is very easy to do. You don't have to spend a lot of money to do it. You can go and build your own interface. Purchase inexpensive interfaces. I think my first digital interface was $39. I bought it at a place called Donner's Digital Interfaces and Country Crafts. Seriously. His wife does little country craft things, and he builds digital interfaces. And I don't know, they're very good interfaces. So I got that, and then finally I got a Signal Link, which I like a lot. But you don't have to use a lot of a lot of fancy equipment with it. The software is all free, and if you want to get a good tutorial on it, go to YouTube. Okay, and the guy's name is K7AGE, or his calls are K7AGE, K7AGE, okay, fellow by the name of Randy, and he will give you the best background in PSK31 that anybody could ever give you. He'll give you the whole layout, and he'll actually get you started on it day one. Yeah, you don't need anything other than your computer to do it. So K7AGE on YouTube. All right, we're continuing along the line here. We have Zed India Victor checking in, and let's hear from him right now.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning to one, good morning to all. And it's great to be here this morning. I thought I might not be able to make it, but I overslept, and my phone only rings twice, and the answer machine picks it up. And I went up to switch that because my driver called me, and that's where we do it. Whoever wakes up first calls and wakes up the other one. But I did not wake up because my phone is only rings twice and the answer machine picks up. And I was sound asleep, I tell you. But, anyway, and then going on about that, and the first show was telling message handling, same show was telling CW, constant wave, is what I heard. So, with the first show in this question, I would like to, you know, pass some traffic. I don't know if it's possible to pass a radiogram through the internet or not. Through this system right here that we're on now or not. Maybe you can let me know. Gordon, when it's your turn coming up next. Another thing would be CW, okay, Constant Wave, and HF and all that. When everything else fails, CW is going to get through. CW is going to get through no matter what. And that little beep and bop, whatever, didn't die, whatever you want to call it, is going to get through. And that's what we're going to need, is a battery, a wire, and a radio. You know, to get through when this world becomes trash, like it's certainly going to become, I feel, possibly. That's my question, my statement on them two areas that I just popped in on. Back to Neck and Joe. November 9th, Zulu in the Victor, Dwayne.
Thank you, Dwayne, for checking in. It is great to have you along. I don't think you can pass traffic on a net like this. I think you have to use the national traffic system. And we have a very good traffic net here in Syracuse. You'll hear those guys on every night. They've been around. They've been doing this thing for 25 years here. Of course, every location has just about every location has a traffic net, you'd be probably better off, working with your own traffic network as far as that regard. We do have six Victors standing by though, and Gordon, hello there once again, sir, with your recheck.
Well, thanks, Gary. Good morning again, Tiger, and good morning to Nathan and Dwayne and everybody else that's been checking in. Interesting net here this morning. I wasn't going to comment on CW, but you know that happens to be a big part of my life. My father was a Cracker Jack. Some of you know this story, but he was an 80 word per minute man. I never caught up with him. I got up to about 55 and very solid. But he still had me hands down. I wanted to mention, I've heard some interesting comments about comparing infrastructure-type communication to the real world of RF, direct communication. I'll tell you, Gary, and I don't know that you've heard this story, but when we started the VOIP net here on South Cars, we started putting it together in the latter part of 2007. I'll tell you what, I just walked into a Donnybrook with these old-timers. Not all of them, but some of them were so fixed in their ways down there on 40 meters on our 7251 nets. They said, this is not amateur radio, etc., etc. Computers are not here to stay. And on it went. Well, I want to draw the attention. Let me buy a nickel here. I want to draw to the attention of everybody that's listening here. We have a wonderful article that's posted on our website. That's www.voip.southcars.com. It generally starts out and says, why use VOIP? Now, this was written by a very good friend of mine and a very ardent supporter of South Cars by the name of Paul Schwann. He lives down in Fort Myers, Florida. He's a school teacher, a very excellent writer, and he wrote an epistle to the Ephesians saying, hey, why not? And this is the reason why, and it goes on, and just beautifully written. So, for anybody that has any adverse thoughts, any questions on the matter, I draw you to our website, and there lies the answer. Thanks, Gary. KY6V, over.
Oh, thank you, sir. And, first of all, before I forget, because I'm not writing things down, just as an exercise, go open up a book. Everybody listening, or anybody who wants to do this, go open up a book. Find a paragraph and count 80 words. And imagine sending that with a telegraph key every minute. That's an insane amount of copy. Then do the same. Do 55 words a minute, and that's what Gordon was talking about, and that's still an insane amount of copy. I mean, I'm really good. I mean, I'm reliable at like maybe six, you know, if I really work on it. And I intend to be back working with it a little bit more. But that's skill, and that is commendable and wonderful stuff to be able to send like that. But Gordon is absolutely right. You know, and again, it's the point that I've been making too. That we have room in this hobby for everything. I personally will never give up HF. I love 40 meters. I love 17 meters. And that's a great band to work, by the way. If you don't work 17 very much, it's a very good band to work. They have some very good people on that band. And can go a long way too sometimes too. And again, you know, one of the great combinations of old and new is doing PSK 31 on 20 meters. It's a great marriage of old and new technology. So there's room for everybody and everything. And what we're doing here on Echo Link is just as much ham radio as plugging in and bouncing the signal off the atmosphere. It's just a different form. And again, as we use and learn about the different technologies and how to use them, they all become integrated into this great hobby that we call amateur radio, and it's a great hobby. It is something that I'm very glad to be a part of. We're doing Ask an Elmer this morning. It is your comments and your questions about amateur radio, and again, particularly if you're new to the hobby, we'd really like to hear from you because those are the people that tend to shy away from asking questions, and you shouldn't, because we've got some great people here to answer questions for you. Let me buy a nickel. Or comments, and we've had a great discussion. Slav started things out with a terrific discussion about embracing the old way of doing things or looking ahead to the future, and I think a lot of us have been able to find value in both, and that's, I think, what it really is all about, is using both ends of the spectrum. So we'll continue that right now. Any further check-ins, we would like to hear from you as we continue Asking Elmer on the Sunday Morning Rag Chew on KC2 RMO, and this is South Cars.
By golly, he made it. Six Victor on another recheck.
Alpha Victor with a recheck.
Did I mean recheck?
Ooh, a good round that time around. And Quebec Yankee, hello there, Jim, and we are glad you made it, sir. Welcome aboard.
Yes, sir.
This is long enough.
KE4QY, XO 1880. Ah, there. Well, I got up this morning, and, well, things are fine, sir. I turned around here to get on at about 10 minutes till, something like that.
About 15 till.
It's gone. It was gone, so I called Gordon and left him a voicemail to that effect and so forth.
Tried to get a hold of Kathy or George.
Tried to get a hold of them, but I couldn't. But anyway... I just thought I'd let y'all know it did come in here about 10 minutes till. And so I don't know why we didn't have no internet, but we sure didn't have it. And then when he came in, boom, voila. And so I'm real thankful for that. And so I'm better late than never, I reckon. That is debatable, but nevertheless, that's what I'm going to stick to anyway. KV4QY.
Hey, Jim, that just makes you, you know, that gives lends star quality to you. You know, you don't want to be there early on. You know, we want to have the dignified late entrance. You know, that's for. No, I guess Gordon was saying that you guys were having some weather up that way. Are you guys getting storms?
Oh no,
it's this weather in this area. We're not aware of it.
It's fine weather up here. You know. Rain or no nothing, it's just a little bit cool, but not
I hadn't looked at
not unjustly so anyway.
But it's fine here,
but
maybe
we've had three days of gorgeous weather. When one day it was 75, the next day it was 77,
and yesterday
was back in the 60s, but hey, that's fabulous. So no, we didn't. I had no weather. Take the internet out. I don't know what took it out. Just maybe somebody run into a telephone pole or something. Or other. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be a storm away that
wasn't
that
weather.
We don't know
here,
about
it. Anyway. It could have been up the line, but here it was beautiful weather and. Took it out. KB4, QY.
Well, it's funny. We had beautiful weather here yesterday and no internet. So I think it must be a condition that's going around. Gordon was looking at the weather, and he keeps a good, sharp weather eye, and looks like there's some stuff maybe heading your way. So batten down the hatches anyway. If you don't have the weather now, you are likely to be experiencing some. But thank you, Jim. Good to know you're there. And speaking of the man, let's move along now to Six Victor and Gordon. Hello there, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Rebecca. Well, I would have thought that you would have had it by now. There is just a very large and nasty front headed due east, and it's right across the Florida Georgia line. It's already past New Orleans and Mobile, Alabama. It's lambasting Pensacola. It's entering into the Tallahassee region. And it's wide and it's broad and nasty looking. You know, it's got a lot of thunder and lightning type activity in it. So if it misses you, well, God bless. Hey, Gary, the only comment I wanted to make on RF versus VOIP, or digital communication, is that we have done a lot of statistical studying here on South Cars since we started VOIP, and consistently, over these last 5 going into 6 years, we come up with ratios of who's connected. And we find, and it stays pretty close to this, that 25% of any of those checking into one of our nets is doing so by computer only. 75% are coming into our nets via RF. They've got a handheld to their computer. They're running a Dash L system. We have the IRLP nodes, which is only... The only way you can get into this is to come in via RF. So just think about those statistics. This is amateur radio, and I'll argue that to the bank. When you have that kind of ratio, we're still singing through a microphone some way or other. KY6V, back to you, Gary. Over.
That is absolutely 10,000% correct. That's the whole deal, and that's a great statistic. That you point out that 75% are coming through some sort of an RF device, and you know you consider how that works too. And I don't know if a lot of people are aware of the big picture that where you know you are interfacing with the internet with an RF device that in turn can interface with other RF devices that interface with the internet, et cetera. I mean, you can go all over the world like this. And it is, you know, with something as simple as a 2-meter handheld, go all over the world. Really remarkable stuff. And when you think about the power of this, it's great things. And the beauty is that it's just one segment of this big hobby of amateur radio, that we have the ability to do things like that, where you can take a little handheld device and connect it to the internet and go all over the world with it. You have the ability to take a tiny little tin of Altoid mints and build a transmitter into it that with a little bit of care and a little bit of luck, you can send code all over the world with it. It's an incredibly diverse hobby, and it's an incredibly rich hobby that we have. And this is one aspect of it, and it's one really terrific aspect of it. One thing I just saw in the text box, late breaking news, that Steve has gone online and purchased a $20 SDR. So welcome to the $20 SDR club, sir. I think you're going to like it. It's a lot of fun. The software, by the way, you want to get, if you're using Windows, is called SDR Sharp, and the if you're going to put it on a Mac, it's called GQRX. Okay, either one will work just fine for you. The GQRX on the Mac requires no setup. You just plunk that thing in there, and you're all set. The SDR Sharp requires a little bit of setup, but nothing big. I think you have to download some drivers, and that's about it. But you'll have a lot of fun with it, and if you get the up converter board, you can get general coverage with that too. And it's just a lot of fun to play with. So good luck with it, and we await your reports on that, sir. So give us an update on the next Ask an Elmer once you've got a little time under your belt with it. I think you'll have some fun with it. We are continuing with our check-ins right now, and KAV was checking in, and we'd like to hear from him right now.
Okay, thanks for letting me back in the door here. This is WD4KAV in Port St. Lucie, where it's 84 degrees last time I checked. I just wanted to make a couple comments about things that were brought up. I was deeply involved in packet radio for years, ran a dual port HF, VHF gateway, ran a bulletin board and all that, so that was a fun mode. I'm not aware of, at least in Florida, that much packet activity anymore. Maybe different in different parts of the country, except for APRS. Let's see. What else? Oh, PSK. That's been my preferred mode for about the last 3 years. And believe it or not, and I can say this because at one time I was good for about 35 words a minute CW, which isn't much compared to 80 or 50. I can't imagine doing 80. I think PSK is darn near as good a performer under marginal conditions as CW because it's a very narrow bandwidth mode, 31 hertz. You can sharpen your filters right up, and with any of the free software, you can copy and properly decode 95 to 99% of the text that's being sent by the other station, and you can do this, hang on a minute, you can do all this running 30 watts or less. I generally run about 25 watts. Now, one other comment, also two other comments. One is PSK is an excellent mode for people with low power stations or indoor antennas or restricted antenna locations. The second comment was, if you think PSK31 is great, try Olivia, just like the person's name. You can literally copy and decode signals below the noise floor. And I do all my, 99% of my digital modes now on 20 meters. Back to net. This is WD4KAV.
Hey, thank you, Joe. Yeah, you're preaching to the choir on PSK31. I love it. I love it. And you are absolutely right. I think you have pretty much the effectiveness of CW on PSK 31. It is a remarkable mode. I've never ventured into Olivia. I have the capability. And I guess when we get the HF station back on the air, we'll be playing with that too, because I've heard some good things about it, and it definitely is worth checking into. But I cannot say enough good things about PSK31. Hey, I wanted to ask you a question. If you're there, Joe, did you get your start by watching Randy on YouTube?
As a matter of fact, I did. And I wasn't going to be a self-promoter, but I also turned around and uploaded my own video after doing it as a presentation to the Stuart Ham Club here about 2 years ago. So if you dig around on the internet and look for, I think it's my call sign, you'll see one I did for Digipan and PSK31. Anyway, but yeah, I did. Randy was the one that started the whole ball.
Hey, that's awesome. I'm going to look for yours, too. I tell you, that guy had some great. He's got about 50 videos, and I don't really know how I found him in the first place. I think I went on YouTube and I just did a search on PSK31, and he came up. But he had a great demo on it and a great instructional on it. And I'm going to look for yours because I'm sure it's got to be in the same league. So that's awesome. But PSK31, if you're not familiar with it, is a digital mode that is very, very sparse in bandwidth. Like Joe said, 31 hertz. It goes a long way on a little power. It is very inexpensive to do and a lot of fun. You get on 20 meters on 14.070. And just start typing away, and somebody will answer. It is very cool stuff. So I urge anyone with any interest at all in HF digital modes to give it a try, because it's worth it. We are talking about all things ham radio related this morning on Ask an Elmer. It's been a great session so far, and we will continue with ZIV. Come on aboard. Let's try it again. ZIV, are you there? Okay, must be having some trouble some way, so maybe we can get him on a recheck a little bit further on down the line. As we continue with our Ask an Elmer this morning, I had some other things I wanted to pass along to you. Another question I wanted to throw out. We've had a real good discussion on the traditional way of doing things versus the new way of doing things, and we can continue that too. But I did want to throw in another thing into the mix as we go along, and that is contesting. Now, I'm not really a big fan of contesting. I'll be real honest with you. I think it has its place, but I think it's also taken over the airwaves on the weekends. I mean, my goodness, every time you go on, you hear somebody calling CQ contest, and you know, you just want to get on the air and maybe do a little rag chewing, and you got 50,000 guys out there, you know, going for blood. You know, I don't. What do you think about it? Do you participate in contests? Do you think contesters are maybe clogging up the airwaves? We'll throw that one out for discussion too, and take another round of check-ins as we continue on the Sunday Morning Rag Chew. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars.
KC9YZR.
YZR, come on aboard, sir.
Hello, Gary. I just say hello to everyone. I'd like to listen to the net and have it transmit over 2 meters over here with my Yaesu FT1900R. I'm putting out 25 watts. I don't put out the full 55 watts. A little bit easier on the transceiver, I guess. As the way I look at it, and I had a lot of different things going through my mind too, whether or not to talk about 4-to-1 balance and 1-to-1 balance and balanced and unbalanced feed lines and low pass filters. A lot of things ran through my mind as I listened to the net there. I actually have a 5-word-per-minute code tape that the ARRL had put out in what used to be called the Tune in the World package. And I still have that here somewhere, the cassette tape. As far as the modes with the computer goes, well, like packet radio and RT PTY and SSTV. Almost bought a robot here at one time at the Eau Claire Ham Fest, but then I decided to download the free MMSSTV program instead, and I did some slow scan TV for a while. But I don't really care for PSK31 or Digipan or some of those, but I did like slow scan TV and RTTY and packet radio. And as far as code goes, I copy about 15 words per minute, 100%, at least the last I checked anyway. And when I took my 20 word per minute code, I was able to pass it, but I would miss a few letters here and there. But I would get enough where I could fill in the blanks, so to speak, so I did okay. I was able to pass it that time, but I did have trouble with the theory part. But I don't really have a question in mind, except for coaxial balance crossed my mind for HF vertical antennas and how large a diameter is that, or doesn't that make too much of a difference to make the coils, and how many turns should you make them, and what do you do when you are using a vertical above ground and you can't put radials up because you live in a trailer court and you'd have to go into at least three different lots to do it, or should I put it back on the ground? It says I can use my vertical without radios if I tie it to a ground rod. So, anyway, back to you, Gary, KC2RMO, KC9YZR.
Hey, thanks, Bernie. As far as the that coil, the way I've always heard it is that at the feed point, and maybe somebody else has some input on this, so, but at the feed point, you use about 6 turns at about 6 inches diameter, and that will keep it is supposed to keep the RF off the line. And I've always done that with every antenna that I put up like that. So about 6 turns at 6 inches. And if somebody has something to add to that, we'd love to hear from that. But that's what I've always used. As far as raised radials go, that's an interesting question. There are some commercial antennas that are vertical that have a raised radial kit. I have also seen people where they have mounted a vertical on the roof, laying out the radials on the roof line, on the roof, and they kind of zigzag them and, you know, make it fit. I don't have that much experience with verticals, so I'm not sure beyond that, but I would think that you could do that. You could run the radials out on the roof, zigzag them, and I think you're going to get adequate results from that. But again, let's see if somebody else out there has some comment on that as well. So the two things that we're throwing out for comment right now are to make a choke on your feed line. For a vertical or for any other sort of antenna. I've always heard it with 6 turns at 6 inches. See if you can add to that. And also, what about raised radials? We submit the question to those listening as we continue on the Sunday Morning Rag 2. Okay, so maybe my... That's got to be the answer, Bernie. It's going to be... Now, let's try it one more time. Feed point chokes. Keep an RF off your feed line. What do you say? 6 turns at 6 inches diameter is what I have heard. So do you agree or disagree with that? We got to help Bernie out here. Well, let's take that one first. So we'll break it down into 2 questions. So right now, RF feed choke, what do you say? We're taking check-ins right now.
Sure is quiet out there. 6, Victor.
I heard crickets chirping. Come on aboard, Gordon.
Was I transmitting crickets? Hi, Bernie. Good morning. I just wanted to throw in, I have no objection to what you're saying at 6 turns at 6 inches. Basically, what you're trying to do is turn the antenna from an unbalanced antenna to a balanced feed antenna. And another approach is that you can buy a Balun coil, and they're reasonably inexpensive, where are already wound in a very small container type thing, and one goes to your hot feed and one goes to your ground on your antenna, and you're off and running. So you get the same way that way. I will say that I have always been a purporter, but I've had people argue this point. That particularly down here in the state of Florida, you know, we're basically a sand dune, if you want to put it that way. So our soil is anything but good conductivity type thing as a ground plane. Verticals down here just don't normally work very well. For the lack of having something to reflect what needs to be reflected. With that, I bet you I opened up the Pandora's door. KY6V, go ahead, Gary.
Thank you, sir. We have kind of a similar situation here, believe it or not, because the soil here is very, it's clay. It's clay soil, and there's a lot of rocks here, too. So it's not the best conductivity in soil here, too. And you don't see a lot of verticals around here as well. Somewhere there is ideal soil to do ground radials, and those folks are happy with their verticals. I know I have seen situations or I've seen certainly ads where you can buy I want to say Diamond is the manufacturer. It might be Diamond or Comet, but they do sell verticals that have raised radial kits, but they've got to be really, you know, they're like four radials on this plate, and they've got to be really long. So you got to have some room for these things, which kind of defeats the whole purpose of using a vertical. You know, you're going to have some 4 32-foot things hanging out 8 feet above the ground. I mean, you know, that doesn't seem very compact to me. So I kind of think that's self-defeating. But if you're going to put something up on the roof, I have read about where people have run a radial field up on the roof and kind of made it fit. You know, you zigzag that wire, you make a bunch of back and forths on it to reduce the length, and they say it works. So I guess, again, keeping true to the hobby, Bernie, it's all experimental. So I would say go for it. Put that antenna up on the roof. Run some radials up there and see what you get. You may be surprised. It may be a good thing. So let's see how that all shakes out. So that is that for that. We are well into now the second hour of Ask an Elmer, and I'm going to throw another comment out there, another question anyway to ask you guys. As far, you know, we didn't get too much response on the contesting question, so we'll still leave that one open. But I wanted to move on to something that usually proves to be a pretty popular topic as we do on these things, and that's ham radio on the cheap. this doesn't have to be an expensive hobby, and as Gordon can tell you, or anybody else who's been around it for a long time, back in the day, those who were in the know used to build their own stuff, you know, and it didn't cost very much. I was just having to look over here in the text box, and Steve had some comments. Steve had some comments about those chokes. So before I get on to the next thing, let's see if Steve's out there available for comment. Steve, Victor Hotel, new owner of an SDR, you had some input maybe on those RF chokes. Come on aboard if you can. Yep, no voice. I forgot about his, he has laryngitis. We'll hold your comments for the next time around. So we'll invite you to speak on those the next time around when you're in good voice. Forgot about that. I'm a thousand pardons, sir. So we'll continue with ham radio on the cheap. And a couple of things that we can pass along, you know, the ways to save a buck on ham radio is they're simple things, but maybe you have some other some other things to add to it, too. Number one, buy used equipment, right? But I would be really, really careful about buying used equipment. I've bought stuff before, and quite frankly, it was junk. You really have to know the person that you're buying from or the organization that you're buying it from. You know, you can buy it from a radio club. Those are usually good guys. You know, they're okay. But, you know, you can go to a ham fest and get ripped off real easy, and I'm sure there's more than one person that's experienced that one, you know. And certainly eBay is like the black hole of Calcutta. I mean, you know, you're really taking your chances with ham equipment on eBay. But, you know, there are some good guys there, too. So you really have to be very particular about how you do things. Buy used, but be careful with it. Another tip would be, obviously, to make your own antenna or cables or anything. It's number one, it's part of the hobby, and it can save you a lot of money. I mean, I look at, you know, cost of wire has gone up, but, you know, it's still a lot cheaper than paying $200 for a wire antenna, right? You know, you can go down to Home Depot and buy some number 14 wire and take some stuff out of your junk box and make a dipole, you know? So make your own stuff. The other thing, network with other hams for parts and used equipment, right? You know, if you know a ham, chances are he's got some stuff sitting in his junk box, you know. You know, you guys can swap stuff around. If you're going to work VHF or UHF, you know, those Chinese radios are really cheap. I bought a Baofeng, and it's been a terrific little radio. I still have my Yaesu, still have my VX150, but, you know, for 30 bills, how can you go wrong? Let me buy a nickel. And finally, for those who are kind of afraid of the cost of working HF, consider QRP. That's low power, okay? And I was just amazed, and I wanted to pass this along. I was on eBay the other day, and I'm just, you know, I'm a shopper, so I'm going through stuff, and I found lots of complete and assembled QRP transceivers. This is a transceiver on eBay for $40 to $60. Okay, they're a single frequency CW rig. I saw power levels up to 8 watts. 8 watts. You can easily work the world on 8 watts with a little care. Just remarkable. So, you know, again, fun to play with, nice and cheap, so go for it. So I'll throw it out for check-ins right now, and we had some comments, too, about KAV had some comments, too, about verticals in Florida. So hopefully he'll join us on this round as we continue with some more check-ins on the Sunday Morning Rag Chew on KC2RMO, and this is South Cars.
UKZ.
LOY.
Okay, we have VKZ and LOY, and anybody else want to come aboard? KAV had some comments on verticals too, so maybe he can jump in there too. Anybody else this time around?
KAV, but I got to be in and out real quick.
Joe, let's take you at the top of the list if you got to get out of here, but you had some things to say, so come on aboard.
Okay, thank you very much. This is WD4KAV. I just wanted to politely disagree with Gordon. I ran an S9 vertical for several years. That's a 31-foot, 40-meter vertical antenna, and I fed it with Berryflex coax, and I always get this mixed up, 27 35-foot long radials underneath it spread out in about 180 degrees. I couldn't go all 360. Held buried in the ground with lawn staples just under the surface, just, you know, right onto the ground, didn't dig a trench or anything. Had a 4-to-1 bolum at the base, which you need. It's because I wanted to work it on more than just 40 meters. And that was one super fine DX antenna. It stunk for local communications during the daytime, as you would expect, because of the low takeoff angle. It wasn't good for NVIS work. But let me tell you, I could work Russia, the Ukraine, Europe, France, Spain, all running about 30 watts on PSK and sometimes on phone. So verticals do work in Florida. If they're ground mounted, you just got to have a heck of a radio field. They don't have to be resonant. Let me let this drop a second. Contrary to what I was told in the when I first started out, you had to have at least four radials resonant on each band. You don't. You can put them resonant on the lowest band you're going to work, and they'll work just fine on the other bands. Elevated verticals don't need as many radials, but I can't be more specific than that because I've never run an elevated vertical. Thanks for letting me check in again, and I'll listen, but I got to get going. WD4KAV.
Hey, thanks, Joe. Yeah, I've played with the idea of doing an elevated vertical myself. The jury's still out on that one. I don't know. But those were some interesting comments, and hopefully we can get some feedback as we continue on those. But really appreciate you coming in there. We'll move it along to UKZ. Come on aboard.
Thank you very much. I just had a quick comment. You can check me in as well. My cell car's number is 2130-2130. And that ham radio on the cheap, oh buddy, you can definitely get taken, especially on eBay. I've heard some stories, like you say, everyone on here knows I primarily use D-Star, and those radios can come with a price tag, and a big price tag. And you look for these things on eBay, and a lot of the fellas I know, or a couple of people, are after getting taken by these ICOM radios. They're coming out of China, and they use the exact ICOM logo. And the circle over the eye, the little hologram and everything that they put into the new logos, these things look genuine. The IC92AD is like a $600 handheld, and they're selling them for $200 and $300. You know, so if anybody sees that, you know, they're figuring a nice 92 to get on D-Star, and these things can barely even do VHF, UHF. They're just crap. They look like the real thing, but they're just replicas. And then you've got, you know, your ICON, I-C-O-N radios. If you're not looking carefully for the M at the end, they can scam you that way. All kinds of these things coming out of China, and it's really not good, you know, for people that are not really familiar with this, you know, the specifications and whatnot to look for. Sometimes in the fine print, there'll be something in there just to prevent these people from getting hit with lawsuits. But there are a lot of scams going on out there, so if you're going to use eBay, definitely be careful. That's one main stressor. Anyhow, don't really have much else. I'll listen through with the rest of the net, and if I feel there's anything worth jumping in on, I'll certainly do so. VO1UKZ, back to net.
Thank you, Daryl. It's like the old, thing. Hey, it's a nice watch. I didn't know Rolex had two X's, you know, they're advertising famous name washers, and you go in the store. It's a George Washington, you know. No, there is. There's just no end of rip-off artists on eBay. And you're right. There are a lot of those. I was not familiar with the fake ICOMs. That's new, but that's kind of disturbing. And I love the icon. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. There's no end to it, and you really, if you're going to do the eBay route, and again, there are legitimate folks out there, and I don't want to put them in a bad light. I've sold rigs on eBay before too. For a friend. I'm selling this for a friend. I was very straight up about listing any defects that were there and the whole thing, there are people there that, and again, I've been on the other end of it, you know, where they'll say, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and you get it, and it's just a total piece of junk, and it's like, you know, it's awful. So really be careful about it. That's the thing. And it's great to be able to save a buck, but it's like that old... It's like that old saying, too, you know, you have to kind of keep that in the back of your head. You get what you pay for, and that is kind of true. But thank you, sir. We will move it along to L-O-Y. He's checking in, and we'll hear from him right now.
L-O-Y here. I actually had the, I guess you can say it, the gamble of buying on eBay. I bought the 6 VX6R. From Yaesu, and the guy, I checked it out, and when I got here, when it got here, it seemed pretty fine. I was lucky enough to, the purchaser didn't even put in his 1-year warranty slip, I guess you can call it, for Yaesu. I have yet to fill it out, but I know it's well beyond my purchasing year, so that doesn't matter for me. But I haven't had any issues with that. I guess I'm one of the lucky ones. Yeah, we actually have, talking about soil, we actually have a lot of sand here in Michigan as well. We have to deal with that a lot. But I'm not 100% sure because I'm for vertical antennas because I've actually never dealt with that myself. I live in a trailer park, so it's kind of hard to do anything like that. And that's why half the reason why I'm on Echolink instead of UHF or HF. But I thought I'd kind of want to share that. This is KDA-LOY, back to net control.
Hey, thank you, sir. Yeah, I've got a VX150 that that was my when I got my technician license. That was my first radio was a VX150, and it was funny. We had a I worked with a guy, and we decided we were going to get our ham licenses. We were both talking about it one day, and I was working at a ISP and a ISP / phone company back then, and we were both doing support. So we had this big support area there. There was about, I don't know, 100 of us in this one room, and Mike and I would IM the questions for the tech exam back and forth to each other, so we kind of studied between calls, you know, and sometimes during them too, because it was the same call over and over. So we went down and we took our exams. And he became KC2RMN, and I was KC2RMO. So we were right next to each other. It was great. And we're both, you know, progressed, and we're both extras and the whole thing. He doesn't get on the air very much. He's mostly on 2 meters, but he's got other things going. It was an interesting story. My VX150 was my first radio, and I loved it. I still have it. I use it in the truck. It's great. eBay is a jungle, and you have to be willing to take those risks, you know, and see what's what out there. You have to be willing to get ripped off. But you can do fine, and like I say, and I really do don't want to paint such a dismal picture, because there are some good folks out there, and just like Daryl was saying, I mean, you can get a good deal there too, and but just be careful. That's the thing. So we're doing Ask an Elmer this morning, and we're talking about all things ham radio related, technical and commentary and what have you. Let me just buy a nickel. I had we're kind of coming on to the last 20 minutes or so of this thing. I did want to ask a couple more questions out there and just see what folks are saying. I did also want to point around, if you look in the text box, there's a very good discussion going on, some very good information regarding verticals and radials, and have a look there if you're at all interested in that. I don't have a lot of experience with verticals. I may, just for kicks, put one up. But if I do, it's going to be an elevated one. So we'll see what we shall see. But I did want to throw a few things out there, too. We had asked this question earlier about contesting. And that seems to be one big thing that's going on. The other thing is, too, you know, you see a lot of talk about Field Day. And I have never participated in Field Day. It's a good thing, I think. Certainly, you know, one of the aspects of this hobby is that when the time comes, if there's an emergency,
you know. And there's no other way to communicate. We're supposed to be able to supply communications to people under really sometimes ridiculous conditions. And, you know, no infrastructure, you know. It's just us and the radio. So my question to you, and we'll throw this out for one round of comment as we're kind of getting tight for time here, but my question to you is, field day worth it? It's the A part of the question, and the B part of the question is, do you participate? So this time around, it's talking about field days. We continue on the Sunday Morning Rag Chew. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars.
Six, Victor.
LOI.
Bravo, Papa.
Bunch of folks that time around. Well, very good. And we'll pick it up with my backup Quebec Yankee. Hello there, Jim.
Hey, hello there, KB4KQI. This is a great subject. And I think it's important that we as amateurs look for these three items. Actually, there's three items. One of which is field day. But as we probably know, if not, we should know, the Federal Communications Commission goes to the World Radio Conference. And there, they are trying to bid for frequencies. And as amateurs, the way we keep the frequencies is by three elements, one of which is field day. So not only is it a fun thing to do, and we should be good at doing it. We should be good at being able to throw together an auxiliary station or a portable station or anything you want to call it. Should be able to go right out in the middle of a field and set up operations. And and that's typical field day operation. Therefore, what we do on field day happens to be 33 1/3% of our sum total in the World Radio Conference. Those scores from field day that we're shooting for, let me cycle. Those scores that we're shooting for are sent in to the ARRL for one cause or another, but they send those totals to the FCC, and that is a third of the ammunition for amateur frequencies. The other two-thirds are SET, a simulated emergency test, and net operations. The net operation, when you check into an HF net, was more HF than anything else, although actually they all should be reported, really, because it does make a difference. But certainly HF should be reported. And those three items are all that they use. We can talk on frequencies until we're blue in the face. We can run experimental radio. We can do all these 10,000 things that you can do on amateur radio. But only three of them count. And one of those three is field day. So if you haven't worked field day, work it. and put your 2 cents worth in. Get in there and be counted, because if that field day is going to make 1/3 of the score that that we have, so it's important that everybody participate in field day as much as possible. Go to a field day site if you can. If you can't, get on the radio and contact those that do go, because the only way you can make points is contact somebody. So at least getting out there and providing a contact will advance the score for the World Radio Company. KB4QY.
Hey, thank you, Jim. That's a great way of looking at it. I love your 33% analogy there. That's great. And I'll tell you something. I've only been to one field day. Shame on me. I have to do more. And you're absolutely right. Excuse me. You are absolutely right. Because you hit the nail right on the head. It's a vital thing. We're supposed to be doing this, you know. And if you've never been to a field day, you will be pleasantly surprised to know that you're part of a community of people that are really amazing. If you want to see people making something out of nothing, go to a field day. Amateur radio operators are some of the most clever people on this planet. And you really see that evidenced when you go to a field day. So, Jim, you're right. Get off your carcass and get it down to field day. Look it up and, you know, when it is, and get the details, and most of all, participate. It is part of what we're supposed to be doing. Six Victor, you were checking in there, and we'd love to hear from you. So come on aboard.
Well, thank you, Gary. Gordon here, KY6V. Nice comments, Jim, right on. Between you and Gary, you've really covered what I was going to put in here. I think that the emergency aspect and capabilities that we as hams have is our protection to keep the bands that we use. And I think everybody recognizes that. Now, there's some other things, too. We've had some very excellent technical breakthroughs that have come out of the ham organization. And this has helped the overall aspect of electronics as well. But field day, to me, is a neat time of the year. This is normally done with a amateur radio club in your particular area, but doesn't necessarily have to be that way. So it's a group effort. You get out there, you have fun, you got a lot of camaraderie. And you always come back learning something. Did you see the way that guy got that antenna up in that tree? I think I'm going to have to do that next time. And on it goes. Go ahead, Gary, KY6V, over.
You are so right. I'll tell you, I've only been to one, and not as a participant. I just went as a visitor. But, I mean, these guys are resonating ladders. I mean, you know, and I'm like, holy cow, you know. It was great. It was really great. So there is so much to learn, and you're right. It looked like a ton of fun, and, you know, we've got a couple of very good clubs around here, and I think I'm going to get my feet muddy and head out to one of them. I'll be checking those sites. It really looks like it's worth doing it. Definitely, again, it enriches you as an amateur operator. It gives you one more little thing to hang on to. It gives you more depth, is what I'm trying to say. It gives you that much more enrichment as part of the hobby. Thank you, Gordon. We move along to LOY as I'm starting to lose my voice. So come on aboard.
LOY here. I've actually had the fortunate time of going to two field days. I know it's not much, but And it was a lot of fun. I actually did participate. I did 40 meters and 20 meters, I believe, under the call sign of the club. And it was a fun time had by all. I mean, if you think of camaraderie, it's a 24-hour event, I think, if I remember correctly, or a 12-hour, no, 12-hour, I think it is. 100% sure. Pretty sure someone will correct me on that. But basically, all throughout the night, we're always laughing and giggling, and someone's got a barbecue going, and it was a fun time had by all, and it's a really neat experience. Hopefully this year I'll be able to participate again in field day. But it's really a fun experience, and you do learn a lot. Interesting side note, the last time we did a field day, we had some severe weather just after we closed, and you've never seen someone take down a vertical antenna so quick. there was actually sirens blaring, tornado sirens blaring all over the place. That was an interesting day. But anyways, I just wanted to make that comment. Back to Net Control. This is KD8LOY.
Hey, thank you, sir. And you're right. Those guys looked like they were having a ball up there on that hill. We have some areas of the country, they would call them mountains. We call them hills around here. But there's a site not far from me. In a town that's spelled like Pompeii, but the locals call it Pompey, which I guess is about, 2,200 feet up or so, somewhere around there. Maybe a little more. It is the site of most of the local TV transmitters around here, and a lot of, any place you want to put an antenna or anything that uses an antenna, they put it there. I live on the southeast part of the city. I have a clear shot to that, and which is why it's such a wonderful thing for me to be working 2 or 6 meters here. We have a great 6 meter repeater up there. It's an insane 6 meter repeater. It goes to 3 different states in Canada, believe it or not. Also some 2 meter repeaters are up there too. So you don't have to work very hard to get a signal from here to there. That's for sure. But those guys had a field day up there. The Liverpool Amateur Radio Club was hosting that one that I went to, and they were having a ball. You're right, and it is a great time. If you look in your text box, I just put the AWRL site for field day in there. It gives you everything, and I do mean everything, that you'd want to know about it, including a field day finder so you can find out where there's one near you. Okay, so... use the link if you want to get more involved with it, and I do urge you to become involved with it. We will continue as we do our Ask an Elmer with Bravo Victor checking in. So, BV, come on aboard.
Well, I guess this is me. This is AJ4 Bravo Papa, and good morning to everyone. The name here is Ernie, and I'm located in Port St. Lucie, Florida. I'm going through the WD4KAV node here, and my South Car's number is 4954. And talking about field day, well, I've been involved with ham radio now for 51 years, and I think I haven't missed but maybe 3 or 4 field day events in all these years. And it's always fun, but I look at field day as a wonderful teaching opportunity for new hams. It helps to familiarize them with HF operations, setting up antennas, operating the equipment, and so forth. I think it's a wonderful opportunity to Elmer new hams. Some of them come by the field day site and they have an HT that they haven't programmed because they don't, one, have the knowledge to do it, or they don't have the programming cable. and there we can help. Let me let it drop. And it's great. I mean, it's great to meet old friends and what have you. It's a great once a year 24-hour ham reunion, and I look forward to it every year. Being myself a CW operator, I'm always asked to participate in field day and operate in the CW category, which I enjoy doing every year, and contribute with a lot of points for the local club, which is the Port St. Lucie Amateur Radio Association here in Port St. Lucie, Florida. But I look at Field Day also as an operating event. Some people refer to it as a contest. I don't see it as a contest, and it was not intended to be a contest. You don't want to shy away the new hams by telling them it's a contest, because then they'll say, well, I don't want to get involved, I don't want to look bad. That's not the case. It's a great opportunity to have them operate the radios and get on the air. It's not about making a huge score, it's about participation, and that's what it's all about. That's the way I see Field Day. Back to that control from AJ4BP, over.
Hey, thank you. Yes, BP. See what happens when you get old and your hearing goes. Thank you very, very much. What great comments. What absolutely great comments. And I hope anybody who's new to the hobby was listening to that. Because there is a great exposure to a level of ham radio that maybe you're not familiar with. And maybe you should get familiar with, you know. There is some great things going on, and you will learn a lot. You'll in just a few hours, you will learn years of probing around on the internet and looking things up. You'll learn it hands-on from guys that really know what they're talking about. So I would urge anybody, particularly anybody who's new to the hobby, to use that link that I put into the text box and find out the details on Field Day, and you know, get yourself down to your local Field Day and participate. And better yet, maybe think about joining one of the local amateur radio clubs, and you can get some great experience through that too. A couple of good things to think about. Well, thank you very, very much for those comments. That was really, really good stuff. Thank you. This has been a great session this morning. I've enjoyed this immensely, and I want to give thanks to everybody who participated. Asking Elmer's always a lot of fun, and this has been one of the better ones. So again, thanks. Until the next time, had some other questions to throw out there and some other comments, but I'll just save them for the next time. It's been a great couple hours, and again, hope everybody comes back again. This has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VoIP net schedules and general information may be found on the VoIP.southcars.com website. Your net control for this session has been Gary. My call is KC2RMO saying 73 and closing this VoIP session. Thanks for your participation. This net is closed.